I'm Dulcie, and I'm an alcoholic.
We love you, Dulcie.
Lots and lots and lots.
Oh,
bunch of them.
Whoa, that, last night I saw that, and I went, oh, I live for that. I'll just live for that all night. And I says, I don't see the guys who are doing that. Are they going to do that? And they, we'll make sure you get that. So, wow, what an energy rush. Woo. Anyway, I'm alcoholic, and I walked into my first meeting in Malibu, California. I was raised in both programs for 30 years in Los Angeles, California. My sobriety date's April Fool's, 1978. And I'm an old broad, and I got my sponsor in Malibu, and she was a double winner, and she spotted me across the room, and I spotted her. And at first, I didn't know I was a double winner. All I knew was all I wanted to do was stop feeling the way I was feeling, and stop drinking what I was drinking, and stop the insanity that came from my years of, yes, I was a hippie. And, you know, if you, I'm pretty much one now still. But anyway, I fool everybody though, but I'm a hippie at heart. And, you know, it didn't matter in the 60s and 70s. It just didn't matter what you were putting in your mouth or anywhere else in your body, as long as it was fun, you know. And, whatever, we had this thing, whatever was warm, you know, whatever's warm, and whoever's warm. And after listening to the little panel on sex and relationships this morning, I'm thinking we're not far from those days anymore either, till we get here. Anyway, my name is Dulce, and if you're Spanish, it's Dulce. If you're Italian, it's Dolce. And if you were in my kindergarten class, it was Dookie. And then if you were with me at my teenage years, I became Ducky. And one of the reasons was I kind of waddled. I found food way before I found alcohol and drugs. And I chewed my booze from a tiny, tiny little girl because it would push down those feelings. And today I made notes that I want to talk and address about the four areas of our disease, physical and emotional, mental, and spiritual. And I was talking to Teresa earlier, and she says, how are you going to do this? What about our singleness of purpose? Yes, I've always gone to Al-Anon, and when I'm in Al-Anon meetings, I talk about the Al-Anon recovery and disease. And when I'm in AA, I talk about that. I got myself up to, in my wise years of knowing that food worked, up to 270 was my top weight. So I stand before you, I'm not just a double winner, I'm a quadruple winner, really. I had to work as hard in all the programs. I had to go to, first of all, my first program was Overeaters Anonymous. It was sort of an outward manifestation of something I might not be getting right, you know. And that was food. And I had to get a food plan. And then when I started realizing that I was working into my food plan, I figured an apple 70 calories, and white wine was 70 calories. And I started getting very clever with how I would do. I just didn't bother to tell my food sponsor that I was substituting wine for fruit, but my drink of beverage of choice is tequila. And we all know that tequila is not a fruit, it's a vegetable. And so I had two cups at lunch and two... It took me about 2 weeks to make it into the other room where the laughter was. You know, it just wasn't funny staggering out of a donut store with marshmallow dripping off you. Nothing sexy about it. Now, a bar stool's a little different, you know. You can kind of work the room for a little while, you know. And you know, if you fall off, they'll pick you up and help you get home to bed, you know. And problem is, when you wake up, they're still there, you know. So I do qualify for all the rooms, and especially Al-Anon, and I am so grateful that my sponsor, who God love her, her name was Jerry, and she passed away in February of this year, and in her 80s, and she had 47 years of sobriety, as someone here in the room does, too. So, gee, you could have been my sponsor. I wouldn't have had to done all that Al-Anon work and stuff. Anyway, but... The thing was is that she recognized my personality and my disease that I had to figure out. The one reason, she said, you got to do a 4-step so we know who you are. And I was so grateful when I got here all these years later and they gave me a name tag and I go, oh, that's who I am. You know, you'd think it'd get better, but, first of all, you figure out who you are, and then you spend the rest of your sobriety getting rid of it, because that's just all ego, and you got to get rid of the personality and just go for the principle. And what's the principle in here? I don't care what room you're in. What's the principle? God is the principle. And last night with all that incredible energy in the room, and I was watching the kids, and I was just a floor, and then they called for the moment of silence. And that room was silent. And that's where you've taught me God is. In that presence, when I am still, and I was seeking God all that time, and I didn't know it was right there where I was, and I didn't know any of that. So my first recovery was put the drink down, put the fork down, stop with the anesthetizing of your feelings. Let's do what the big book says. I had to get them on paper, and I wrote volumes and volumes and volumes. And it's so incredible that that you guys can get sober at an earlier age. I was 33 when I stopped drinking and using, and I had to catch up all my feelings from infancy, which I never had to cry. It was it was not okay to cry in those days. There was Spock or somebody told my parents, just don't pick them up, put them in the other room, and that was fine with them because they didn't want to be bothered with me anyway. And I was an only child, and when I was born, my mother was in labor 4 days, and she almost died. And when I finally decided to come on out, I have done a prenatal inventory, and I know I was in there going, I'm not going to do this one. Oh, no. I looked out at them, and they looked at me, and I'm like, oh, God, am I in trouble? And they were like, oh, God, are we in trouble, And they didn't know why, and I didn't know why, and I didn't know that they were, my parents were not the drinkers. It was their parents, so I got a hold of a couple of adult children of alcoholics, which taught me to not feel, not cause any problems. That, the story was my mother had a nervous breakdown at my birth, and it was my fault. And it was my fault because I was a 10-pound baby, and I made her labor too difficult. So I grew up with that, and then I just kept getting heavier and heavier. And then I found tequila, and I wasn't good with pot. Sorry, guys, I tried really hard. But acid wasn't half bad. And I say half bad because the first half was awesome. I mean, I saw Jesus. I saw Jesus. Wow. I looked in the mirror, and for the first time, I was amazing. I had eyes, and I was gorgeous, and a half an hour later, I'm crawling around on the floor with spiders all over me, and I know I'm being trampled down by horses, And so I thought, well, the good idea would be to get in the car and get out of there. I couldn't tell which pedal was the stop and which one was the go, and I did get in an accident. But can you imagine they didn't arrest? I mean, what was wrong with those people? I'm in this accident, I'm high as a kite, and I guess maybe there wasn't any alcohol in me at that time. But anyway, I've done my deal. I've done my deal. I've done it to death's door. I've done it to death's door. If I pick up a drink now, I am not telling you I'm unhappy. I am not telling you to fuck you. I'm telling you I am going to kill myself now, because that drink is the loaded gun for me, and or that whatever that's a substance that's going to trigger me, and that's my physical allergy. You know, there's, you know, what, 80% of this room can walk away from the table and never want another cookie for the rest of the day. And there's a few of us that have that eating disorder that if they pick up one cookie, they're going to leave and go invite as many as they can get. That was my story. So I have all of those going on. The next thing I went to after the physical, of course, was the men. You know, it was like, fill me, fill me, fill me. Just fill me, just fill me, you know. I have that disease that goes through rampant. I don't care which one of the rooms we're in or which one we're working. For me, it's that false sense of separation. I separate from God, who I didn't even care about or want again. I had had a religious upbringing. I was done with that. I separate from you because I'm so different. You know, I spent my teenage years and my young years wanting to be unique and stand out and be different and be arty and be cool. I had to be cool. But then I couldn't figure out why I didn't fit in. I couldn't fit in because I had decided in my own head the stories I made up about myself was that I was different, you know, and I didn't fit in. And when I see the camaraderie here, it's just amazing. So I had to handle the physical first, and that's the first half. You know, forget the other 11 and a half steps if you haven't taken the first half. I have to put the substance down, or this brain and this body is going to be writing about alcohol and it's going to be speaking and thinking with the alcoholic mind. So that's the first half. I could not come to two because I had not come to believe in a power greater than myself. I got in the rooms. I put down the drink. I put down the substances. I did not put down the men. You talk about 13th stepping. It's what really kept me coming back for the at least 5 years. You know. Oh, yeah. Anyway, they're kind of worse stories in sobriety than they were on the acid trip, you know. But anyway, I survived somehow. I was literally 5 years sober. Now I'm really going to date myself. No cell phones. Guys, don't text during meetings. It so annoys me. It's so friggin' rude, you know? Yep. Anyway, don't you know when I'm talking, you're supposed to be listening to me, not texting your friends? I don't mean in here now, I haven't seen anybody, but in meetings in general. I had to stop at telephone booths because I was so afraid of picking up. This was 5 years. And I remember calling from a phone booth and asking my sponsor, could I be having acid flashbacks at five years? And she said, in your case, yes, honey. How many blocks are you away from the Radford Clubhouse? Just get there. Sit on your hands. Sit on your butt and don't move. Just sit there. And that's how I had to get, you know, the periods of my sobriety. I wouldn't have given you a nickel for my life until I was 10 years sober. I didn't think I was going to make it, literally. And I was at meetings. I did everything you told me to do. I wrote inventory after inventory. I gave them away. I worked with others. I picked people up off the curb and says, come on, you look like you need a meeting. You know? Jeez. Anyway, the little Volkswagen bus I drove around L.A., and I did get sober there, and I'm so very grateful I had all those thousands of meetings that when I acted out too bad in one place, I could just go to another one. It's much too embarrassing to go back to the same liquor store or the same meeting and behave that way, you know. But I stayed sober. I stayed clean, and I did what you told me to do. So I did that fourth step, and that's where I had my spiritual awakening. I had to skip two, and I had to skip three. I didn't have a God, didn't want a God, wasn't asking for one, and it took what it took, and it took me writing and then reading it to a sponsor. But here was the magic of the rooms. This is not an intellectual program. This is not a psychological program. This is not therapy, even though we get it. Oh boy, we need it. But it is a spiritual program. This is where, what does that mean, spiritual? What does it friggin' mean, you know? This is where, when I read that to my sponsor, and I refused to pray and ask for help, and she told me to, and she sat me in front of the fireplace to burn that inventory, I wouldn't do it. I was that resistance. And the big book talks about it. On page 47, this was who I was in all those years. I might have been able to save me a lot of that pain and agony. But here's the word that applied to me, because I had been a good little servant of God for many, many years and as I was growing up. And besides a seeming inability to accept much on faith, we often found ourselves handicapped by obstinacy, sensitiveness, and unreasoning prejudice. Many of us have been so touchy that even casual reference to spiritual things made us bristle with antagonism. This sort of thinking had to be abandoned. And that's what happened at my fifth step that day. I'm a firm believer in doing that writing, getting it on paper. A new person asked me to sponsor him yesterday, and I said, fine, but before you call me, you get something on that paper. Because the big book says you don't just call and talk and talk and talk and talk. The big book says, what do I do with fear, anger, resentment, and excitement? Get it on paper. Black and white, I can see the lie. When I'm reading that to you, or I'm reading what I wrote, I can see the lie. It's tangible. Why was I telling myself that story about me? Why was I telling myself that story about you? And this goes into the Al-Anon program. Now we're moving to emotional. The drugs are out of the way. I've had a spiritual something. What does that mean? That means suddenly I realize I'm not my hair. I'm not my skeleton and my bag of skin here. You know, I'm not my job. I'm not the man I'm with. I'm not the man I'm trying to get. I'm not the man I'm getting rid of. You know? I'm a spiritual being having a human experience. What does that mean? It means I get to turn to spirit. And yesterday in my little Zen reading, oh, I go all over the map, yeah. AA is my foundation. It's the table with my four legs, and I have to work all four of my, I work Al-Anon, I work sex and love addiction, I work food, and I work alcohol and drugs, okay? I have to have that table firm, all those legs up even, or my sponsor called me her little red wagon sponsee, that all of my wheels had to be oiled every day. Because I could break out in any one of those to fix me at any given moment. Anyway, I have to have this firm foundation that I can then go out there and do other things. 2 weeks ago, I was at... A sponsor of mine says, hey, my boyfriend and I are going out to the UFO convention. You want to go? I said, sure, let's go. So, anyway, are they with me? No, I think a couple of them attached and came back with me. But anyway, the point is I stay sober today. I have a God of my understanding. I have a spirit sense. I have a foundation that I can do all kind of weird things and just have a great time. I have a great life. I have so much fun. And I was saying to Nicole, I said, I'm just so in love. Just so in love. You know, and there's no man there at the moment, you know. But there's this spirit sense that I am not just this carcass that's walking around and one day I'll walk out of it, you know. But emotionally speaking, the only way I survived was to get into Al-Anon, because those parents that I mentioned, they were convinced that every problem in their life was my fault, and if only I'd been different. And I, being the Al-Anon personality, and people say, well, what's an Al-Anon personality? Well, this is the best analogy I can give, and don't quote me, this is just my opinion. A straight alcoholic says, if only they were different, I would be safe and non-disturbed. Al-Anon personality, again, generally speaking, if only I were different, then everything would be okay. I gotta change me. I gotta fix me. I gotta be thin. I gotta be rich. I gotta help them. I've gotta help fix them. I've gotta rescue them. Then everything will be okay. And an alcoholic say, they just straighten up, you know. And again, it's a general, and this is just my observation. And you know what's the most perfect couple? Is an Al-Anon personality with an alcoholic personality, because they're in total agreement. If the guy, excuse me, it could be girl or woman, the alcoholic says, if only you were different, and she or he says, you're right, if only I was different, we'd be so happy, so happy. So they're in total agreement. And who starts to die, you know, and it's a killer. It's a killer. So you gotta know which one of those people you are, and how did I find out which one I am? I'm the, if only I was different, my parents would be okay and they'd be happy and I'll make myself, what is it you want me to be? Okay, you know, what is it you want me to be? And the one thing I did right in here, is I kept coming. No matter how ugly it got within my being, no matter how weird my life would get, whether I was, I worked in Hollywood for 30 years in the film industry, and you get hired and fired 45 times a year. Literally, not fired exactly, but you're let go. So you want to build some financial security? You want that promise to come true? That, you know, about having fear from financial insecurity will leave us. Just have to get a job about every 2-3 months. You know, that'll get you over it. You'll get to know who brings in the jobs, where the money comes from, whose supply it is and who it isn't. Marry a few times and you find out whose money it is and isn't. You know. You find out that God is my supply. You find out that spiritual source that awakens me every day, hopefully. Ah, God, one more day. I get up and some mornings, the only time I'm in trouble usually is if it has to do, my only areas now, God's gonna laugh at this when I say my only areas now, computers and cars. That's the only thing that will rob my joy now, because I can't seem to do either one of them, you know. And lately I've been going through both, and I never get the right car. You know, it used to be I never got the right man. I never was at the right party. I was never at the right meeting. If only I was at that other meeting, I'd be better, you know. And that's just the disease of this physical world here, you know. So I go, that's a mental issue. So I've got to recover in all those areas. I've got to recover physically, emotionally, mentally, because my perceiving of what's going on here is way off, and I need all of you. I need that meeting that day. It turns me right around. I need to run by my black and white lies that I'm telling about myself to one of you, and then you say, well, have you ever looked at it this way? You know, last night I was in my friend's house, and this is how it works for me. This is what you've taught me. I'm in my friend's house, and about 2 o'clock in the morning, I start hearing this beeping. A smoke alarm is deciding to tell me that it needs a new battery. Only it's in my end of the house. I'm looking up and down the halls, you know, we're trying to find the smoke alarm. Finally, this morning when it gets light, I look up and it's right in my room. Only I get it down and it's not beeping. And then I go out and I realize way up in the peak, and everybody's sleeping except me, because it's right, way up in the peak of the ceiling, which needs a really big ladder to get it. That's the one that's beeping. And so how can I sleep? What can I do about this? Okay, God, I go outside, or I wake them up, or I just shut up, you know. And I thought, this is what you taught me. I thought, why don't I think about every time it beeps, God's giving me a kiss? I wouldn't have come up. I'd have gotten out the gun and shot the thing, you know. Anyway, you have taught me how to be safe and non-disturbed no matter what, except computers and trying to pick out the right car. Haven't got that one down yet. Give me a few more years. But anyway, you know, it's just a joy to know that life just is, and God just is. And I heard Chuck C. speak at my very first AA meeting in 1978, and he said, and I wrote it in my big book because I didn't even want God then, you know, and I thought, he said, if you're looking for God in here, and then he'll laugh and he'll say, you ain't gonna find him, and his tummy starts jiggling, he goes, oh, you like Santa Claus. And he says, and then he thinks he's funny, and he says, first of all, he's not lost. And then he says, because that which you're looking for, you're looking with. What the heck does that mean? So I wrote it down in my big book, and I looked around the room and I said, these people know what that means. I'm going to hang around them until I know what that means. And later on, I found a scripture that said, that which you're seeking, you already are. And that which you're looking for, you're looking with. I thought, that's pretty profound, you know. And the one thing I've come to that is my food on a daily basis is step 11. But it's 11 for a reason. It's about getting quiet and listening to God. But who can do that when I haven't accomplished freedom from bondage of self? Because, you know, you start to meditate and here comes the mind, here comes the self, you know. And it's like a fish swimming around in the ocean trying to find water, because that right there where I am is the presence of the God that I'm looking for. But it's interesting, and I'll say he, I have no gender on God, but I say he just because it's easy. He's a gentleman, and he's never going to interrupt. He's going to wait until I get quiet enough and listen and invite him in and be quiet. Ah, now I can hear. And that's why last night, I love that moment. I mean, there is one place that you and I don't care what color you are, what age you are, what political, whatever you are, whether you like girls, boys, dogs, cats, it doesn't matter. There's one place that you and I can be together. There is no difference at all. And that's in that presence. That's in that silence. That absolute no thought behind the mind. Absolute silence. Being still. Because we have it as our 11th step. And believe me, when I got to 11, I needed that. I was starving for connection. And I thought it was with one of you, and it was with my higher power, myself, my God, the God of my understanding, that still small voice, listening for that still small voice to connect. And I call it the kiss. When I'm quiet enough, meditate long enough, and sit there, there's that kiss. Ah, presence. My recognition of presence. And that's the freedom from bondage of self. And it takes me 10 steps because I'm an alcoholic. I'm an addict. This lifetime, I've come in to keep substance away from interfering with the rest of my life. The only way I can do it is to feed where I was trying to get it out of a bottle. They call this spirits. because I was seeking spirit. You know, what's that? You know, it's something greater, higher than this physical world, this thing I'm looking at. And, you know, there's this wonderful saying that silence is not the absence of sound, but the absence of self. I don't know another place on the planet that you can get that in an hour by running the steps. 1, 2, 3. Oh, must be. No matter what I'm going through. Oh, there's something I'm powerless over, and it's the one human condition we cannot stand, is to think we're powerless. We come in these rooms, we find out. Lack of power was my dilemma, and I'm powerless. I'm powerless over the alcohol. Ah, I'm powerless over the drugs. I'm powerless over that man over there going like this, you know. I was powerless over being 13-stepped, you know. I didn't know it. But it takes me 10. Ah, admitting I'm powerless over. Oh, whoops, came to believe there's a power greater than that thing that I think has the power over me. I don't care if it's money, property, prestige, him, them, you know, parents, children, whatever it is. Ah, I got no power here. What freedom? Came to believe there's a power greater in that presence. If I can get quiet enough, well, how am I going to get quiet enough? I'm telling all the stories about you and all about me and what I should do to fix it and what they should have done and what they shouldn't have done. There's my Al-Anon program. Ah, came to believe a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. 3, made that decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. My first Al-Anon meeting, I was a month or two sober. I think I had about 4 months when I actually hit the Al-Anon meeting after my sponsor said, you know, we got an Al-Anon meeting around the, yeah. And I walked in there with, should I leave him or should I stay kind of thing. And I walked in there and all of a sudden, this was what I got out of Al-Anon, if I get not another thing. Perhaps the only decision you have to make today is to live in the third step and make no decision. Should I leave? Should I go? You know? And no matter what a person is struggling with and who, I know if you just wait on the Lord, wait on God, wait on your higher power, wait on spirit, if you just wait, you watch, you make no decision, it's made for you. It's made for you. What freedom. And I'm not talking about laying over and letting it roll over you. That's not what I mean. I'm talking about waiting for that magic moment when God goes, move now, action. But until then, the biggest relief, because I thought my whole life that I was having to make the decision about whatever it is. And you know, last week I had that same issue with the computer. Aha, I've already bought them. I returned 2 already last week and got the wrong one. And the way I got my freedom, first of all, with men was I quit marrying them, first of all. Thank you. You'll all thank me for that. And then last week, suddenly I went, I'm absolutely powerless over knowing which one is going to work for me. And I went, well, give it to God. You give everything. And I did, took them back. I had such freedom. And get home, and then my computer's working. You know, it's like, God does computers. And anyway, but it's to make no decision. What's my decision? I've got one to make. To live in the third step. To make a decision to turn my will, my life, my finances, my sexuality, whatever it is, over to the care of God. Well, what does that mean? Ah, well, I better make a list here of all my lies about you, and all my lies about me, and all my lies about God. Get them on paper, take them over to God, myself, and as Clancy says, some plumber. And I love that. You know, take it over to the girl that's the grease monkey up at the, you know, O. Henry that's in the program. It doesn't matter what your field is. You don't have to have a counselor to figure you out. The book says more will be revealed. It doesn't say more will be figured out. If you're in your head and in that mental disease, you're trying to figure it out. No, sit, be still. More will be revealed. Come home, Dulcie. Come home. That's where I've always wanted to be, but I dirtied my home so bad. You know, emotionally dirtied my home. I'm a Virgo and a neatnik, so, but anyway, you know, Virgos, you know what they say about us? They say we take great pains and then give them to others. Just ask Elizabeth. She lived with me for a year and a half. Anyway, yeah. No, that goes over there. But we're right about that, you know. But anyway, you can call us anytime to help you organize yourself. Anyway, so anyway, you know, we come to that. Thank you, God, I am not responsible. And I'm going to tell you, I'm all right. I have two stories I'm going to tell, and some of you have heard it all already. Don't let me forget the second one. The first one is, I'm going to start with parents, and then I'm going to start with when we pray for other people. So I'm an only child. I'm growing up in this family dynamics. I'm 270 pounds, and my mother's overweight. My father drinks Smoke and David wine one glass at Christmas every year. So couldn't find the family disease there. But both the grandfathers were the drunks, and I heard those stories too, you know. And my mother gets, you know, I'm trying to survive. I'm working my program. My mother gets Alzheimer's. She's in the nursing home. I'm visiting her, and my father is convinced that if only I was different, you know, my mother, it would be all right. I could make it all right. And I was just convinced, being the only, if only I was different, if only I was more attentive or went more of this or that, or, you know, I'm going to fix this. And I had a wonderful sponsor. In the meantime, my father can't stand that his wife is leaving him. And finally, we put her in a home, and this is way before Alzheimer's was recognized. It was brand new. And first, I'd never even heard the word till they diagnosed her. They had no facilities. There was no consciousness about it. So we got her in a nursing home, and finally, my father couldn't stand it, and he couldn't stand being without her. Now she's incontinent, and she's diapered, but he's got to bring her home. They're so enmeshed. I came from a family that neither one of them knew where one began and the other one end. All we knew was my mother would say to me, "Now don't get your father angry," because he was a rageaholic, and my father would always say, "Now don't upset your mother, because she might flip out, you know, because she'd have the nervous breakdown and blah, blah." So finally, this goes on like 10 years. My mother's a vegetable about 6 years. I'm going out with the slippers and the, you know, gowns, and I have an Al-Anon sponsor, thank you, God, who's my double winner. And she said, "You got to have a parent plan. You're going crazy." You know, how many times, no matter how many times I called him or went, and I wasn't real great about it, guys, because the dynamic was so awful that I was going to die if I succumbed to their stuff. But I did the best I could, and I was always concerned. She said, "I think you should back off and let's, what are you the most comfortable, how often calling them?" You know, and I once got a horrible hate call from my father saying, "Hey, you're the worst, no daughter of mine." You know, he couldn't stand that I was in the program. Could not stand that I was in Alcoholics Anonymous, because he took me away from the family dynamics, which they didn't want interrupted. Let Dulcie be the scapegoat for our everything, you know. So I'm on my way one morning, way out. We finally had to move her to another place, because she would walk out in the street. So we, you know, and they didn't have wards yet for Alzheimer's. And I'm on my way, and this time she's 65 pounds, and this is a woman that had been 200 her whole life, you know, and she's about 65 pounds and tied now because she hurt herself all the time. And she's a, you know, like a vegetable, literally. And the only peace we had was when I'd go out and sit by her bed when she was asleep, and I would meditate, and I would sit, and I'd be quiet, and I'd pat her, and she'd be asleep, because if she was awake, she'd bite me. But So, she's napping. I'd sit by her bed, and I'd pray, and I would be quiet, and I'd see a little smile come over her face, you know. So this is going on, and finally I'm coming out. I said, God, why don't you just let her go? Why don't you take her? You know, what is keeping this woman like a vegetable for 4 years? For what, you know? And the voice said as loud as I've ever heard, what makes you think this has anything to do with you? We have our contract. There's your Al-Anon program right there. Every single person that you think you have something that you got to do for them or fix them or whatever, forget it. They have their contract with God, and you ain't it unless you volunteer over and over. I'm sorry. There's a scripture, and I quote the Bible, but I also quote anything that rings truth for me, that says, let my people go. You know, just open your hands. It's not your job. I didn't hire you. What do you think I'm doing? This is God talking. What do you think it's my job? Why are you constantly taking over my job? And I got my relief. And this was after my sponsor taught me to send, because it was killing me to go see this, she taught me to send pictures in the mail to this nursing home, cut out little kittens or things that I know she would like, and just say, I'm sending you love. And when I'd go in the nursing home, they had them taped all around her bed. Here she was tied, but the pictures are taped that I had been sending. You know, and they knew that somebody loved that woman, you know. But I learned from God that it was none of my business. It was God's business. Let my people go to their own contract. We don't know what it was. We weren't there when we signed it, when they signed it. We weren't even, I don't even remember signing the one I earned. I had to have been drunk, you know. Anyway. So, you know, I've been learning through the years. And then the other story I want to talk, actually there's two of them, because what I'm talking about is direct experience here, you know, that actually happened, that I maybe meditate for 3 years and nothing comes through except maybe peace, quiet, you know, for a minute and a half, and then the phone rings, you know, and then if I'm not involved in mine, it's yours, you know. And I lost a marriage in sobriety that I really, really loved. And I'd met him at a meditation retreat, and we were married about 13 years, and this marriage just started to dissolve. And literally, and the more harder I worked, because, you know, I'm going to get to those workshops, and we're going to go to this, and we're going to go to that. And we went to recovering couples and, you know, meditate harder and longer together, and let's read the big book together, and let's get on our knees. And, you know, no matter what I did, this man was heading that way, right? And it was one of my biggest disappointments in sobriety, because I had a lot of years at this time. It was actually 15 years ago. And the only thing I really ever wanted was a marriage. I hadn't really grown up wanting kids or anything. I just wanted happy, spiritual, loving marriage. And thought with the you know, with the principles, the inventories, I had 10 sponsors by this, and I'd get one in every little area I needed help in, you know. If I didn't like what you said, I'd call that one over there, you know. I have a few sponsors like that. Oh, if I don't like what you said, I'll just call that one. It didn't matter. I somehow recovered. Anyway, I'm walking in the Hollywood Hills after this is dissolved, and I am devastated, and my heart, literally, I thought my heart was going to break, literally in two, and I go, oh, this is what they mean by a broken heart. And I'm walking, and I say to God, how can this be? My heart is breaking. And the voice, same voice that told me about the contract, said, hearts do not break. They expand to love those who cannot love them. So that feeling of, it feels like your heart just ripping in two. If you felt it, I'm sure many of you have. It's ripping. It's expanding to give us and teach us the love that this room teaches, unconditional. Back of man going away, love. And then it said, the reason you're hurting is you think you have to stop loving him just because he stopped loving you. And I opened my heart and I just poured love. And to this day, whenever he crosses my mind, just pour love toward him. Because hearts hurt when we stop loving and I start closing them up and I refuse to pour the love because I think I'm supposed to because they have. Not true. Let that heart up and broke open and just pour, you know. And that's the program. Love and tolerance is our code. Unconditional love. It's not kidding when it says make that decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. It's not kidding. My will and my life and my husband and my finances and my computer and over to the care of God. It's not a joke. But boy, can we do this, you know. My brakes have been on many, many times, you know. So whoever's coming in or going out, it's like a wave, you know. In sobriety, I've lost everything 2 to 3 different times. And I mean money, strike, on and on and on. And it started going like, you know, the wave goes out and the wave comes in. But there's nothing that takes away fear of financial insecurity like suddenly having $3 in your pocket. Heard somebody speak the other day and the guy was calling his sponsor and he said, I don't know what to do. I got $600 in the bank and and the sponsor says, you got $600? Click. He calls him back. He says, whoa, 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 whoa. He says, $600? Yeah. Okay. Click. You know, nothing takes it away. I know people with money in the bank, tons of it, and they're terrified they're going to run out. You take it all away, there's no terror. Somebody gives you a hamburger, you go over there and, hey, come here, give me a haircut, and, you know, I need some makeup for a wedding or whatever it is, you know. It's amazing. Everything gets handled if I stay sober. If I stay sober, and if I, for me, abstinent. Abstinent from the things that hurt me and hurt you. Abstinent from thinking I'm in charge of your life and I know what's best. Abstinence from trying to fix, you know, fix here, fix in the mouth, fix anywhere. Fix, 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 and that's the Al-Anon disease. Fix. If I fix me, then you'll love me, and if I fix you, then I can love you, and forget it. Nobody's broken. It's not broken. My heart's not broken. I'm just not loving. I'm just not accepting God. What is God? God is what is here, now, this moment, not down the road an hour from now, not yesterday, right now. That's it. That's all I got is the now. The Aborigines have 2 words for time. They don't have minutes. They don't have seconds. They don't have days, hours, years. Nothing. 2 words. You're either in the now time or in the not now. And if I'm in my head, I'm in the not now. 2 times. That's it. There's no other time. We're either now or we're not now. And I'm going to close with one last experience. And that is that prayer in the big book about acceptance, acceptance. Oh, don't you love that? What does that mean? It's always my problem. It's because I'm seeing it this way. I'm seeing it this way. My perception, my story, I'm telling about it. If I drop the story, it's amazing. Like with the thing with my husband, when I tell that story about, oh, Dulcie's alone, she didn't even with all the programs, she still couldn't say that married. I'm telling her this story instead of, oh, back of man walking away. How simple is that? There's God. Oh, there's no story around that, unless I make it up, you know. And friends of mine made me a T-shirt that says, I make stuff up. And don't we? You know? You know, if we were all in the middle of the room in a circle, holding hands, facing each other, and we're not turning, and I come up to Debbie and say, Debbie, now what's this room like? Debbie's going to say, well, there's a white screen, there's a microphone, there's a thing here, whatever this mechanical thing is. It's something, it's technology, I'm sure. Anyway, I just can't live with things like this. So they can't live with me either. Anyway, and then I you're all looking at me. But say Cindy, and I say Cindy, and she's looking that way where she's eating. I say, tell me about the room. And you say, well, there's a door, and there's a thing to get water, and there's thermostat. And Debbie says, there is not. There's no thermostat in this room. There's no door. All there is a white screen. And Cindy said, there's no white screen. There's just two doors, a thermostat, and a jug of water. You see how we are? I take that four-step story to my sponsor about what's in the room, and they start me turning around the circle like this. Oh, that's what the fifth step does. Turns me around, and I get the whole room, and I know what the room is. Turns me around, and I get all of what God is right there, right now. Back to the acceptance. Doesn't mean sometime. Well, if you want to be uncomfortable, it means sometime. And if I've got here, there's somebody out there or something out there I am not willing to accept. Thank you very much. So I'm going to pray for you. And the big book says in Freedom from Bondage of Self, it's my favorite. It has never in 36 years failed me ever on my knees pray for who it is. One time I had something, I says, I can't pray for them to get everything I want because my experience is they do. Well, who wants, you know, I'm not getting it and they're getting it. And because I prayed for them. She told me a secret. Pray for these three things. There's not a person on the planet you cannot pray for these three things. She said, pray for their sobriety. Pray for their sanity. And pray for their serenity. No matter how much you hate anybody or they piss you off, any of those three things would you not want on anyone. So Freedom from Bondage. I'm working on a film. I'm coming home late. I got a 3 a.m. call. I got to be back at the studios. I'm exhausted. I need some sleep. By the way, I did 30 years in the film business, never took a drink, even had to give up coffee, couldn't eat the sugar because of my other room, and I survived. Why? Because I planned, I prepared, and I protected my sobriety, and the same with my eating. I took it with me. I took care of myself. You guys taught me that. I can work 18-hour days. I can work 20. One day I worked 26 hours, you know. I didn't take a drink. Everybody was shooting up, doing this, doing anything to stay awake. Coffee, coffee, coffee. Cigarette, you know. It can be done is all I'm saying. So I'm coming on. And Ed, across the street, decides to have his drunk this night. And he was a periodic, and it was almost like a woman getting a period. And he had a motorcycle. And once a month, maybe his wife, I don't know, but he had a wife and two kids, and once a month, he gets out there 10, it's like now 10:30, 11 o'clock, which is okay till maybe 11 or 12, but he's revving and he's tearing up and down where we lived and very quiet out in the hills of Canoga Park, you know, Woodland Hills out that way and above the hole in the sky and where I lived. And he's right. I'm like, oh, God. And I take my pillow from the bedroom, which is in the front, and I go to the back, and I'm walking across the room, and I need sleep. Okay, pray for it. Okay, I'm praying. This before I knew those three things. I'm praying, okay, God, you know, I need sleep. Okay, I'm going to pray for Ed. Okay, what do you want me to take him a big book? Do you want me to go over and invite him to a meeting? What do you want, you know? And the same voice that said those other two things to me, these, you know, just a few profound things through the years that God, the voice says. And this voice said, scruff of my neck, shaking me like a cat would shake its baby kitten, or a dog would, you know. You are praying incorrectly. Well, I'm saying the prayer and the freedom from bondage thing, and I'm just getting worse here, you know. You're praying incorrectly. The prayer is, God, Ed is in trouble. He needs your help. I got some drunks next to me now. They've been very quiet for about a year. Well, maybe 9 months. They're in trouble. I'm not in trouble. I got sobriety. I'm sober today. They're in trouble. God, they need your help. They need your help. Wow. That's what that prayer means. And I can pray for their sobriety. And I can pray for their sanity. And I can pray for their serenity. Because who gets all three by doing it? Yes. Right home, right here, present, now. They don't know how to do that. So I open my heart and I pray for those things. And then I'm going to end. And I did remember what I read. I had this little Zen calendar, and yesterday, and it was from St. Francis, and I've never ever heard this before. And he says, don't try to change the world, change worlds. I can move from this materialistic planet of duality, good and evil, black and white, good and bad, rich or poor, drunk or sober. I can move from that world and move into the only world that really matters, and that's the presence of God spiritually right here, right now. And it works with every single decision or every single issue that I'm dealing with. Stop. Be present. Be still and know. Be still and know that I am God. Thank you so much for letting me share.